Today is Thursday, March 21st, 2024. This is Quick Start from CBN News. I'm Dan Andros. Does North Korea's frantic military development mean war? We'll have that top story and more on today's podcast, where we bring you news from a Christian perspective. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a rating if you haven't done it yet on Apple Podcasts or whatever platform you listen to this podcast on. We'd appreciate that. We'd also like to hear from you. QuickStartPodcast@CBN.org. You can email directly to us. Joining me now to get through the news of the cray, Billy Hallowell, Trey Gones Phillips. A lot to get to on this Friday Junior edition of the podcast. On the focus story, we're looking, Billy, at the pro-life battle ahead. This is still going on in post-Roe world. What do we got today?
Yeah, in fact, it's heating up in the post-Roe world. We've got Jeff Bradford, the president of the Human Coalition, sharing how we can kind of navigate even some of the misconceptions around the abortion discussion.
All right, looking forward to that. Because, I mean, we know that it's going to be a big topic in 2024 in the election, so certainly want to hear all the angles on that topic. So looking forward to that. Also on the main thing, North Korea getting ready for war potentially. CBN's Dale Hurd has details on that for the main thing. With the housekeeping out of the way here, we're going to head over to the news in 90 seconds. In a joint announcement yesterday, the White House and the Environmental Protection Agency unveiled their most aggressive standards ever finalized on the auto industry. These regulations target gas-powered vehicles. They're designed to push wider adoption of electric vehicles, and according to officials, they're expected to make it so that 70% of all new car sales are zero emissions within a few years. Toyota continued its pushback against these Biden climate regulations and said the EPA's rule is a, quote, regulatory mandate that will force it further into the EV game than it's currently positioned. The U.S. Supreme Court has declined to take up a case involving Catholic parents trapped in a custody battle after refusing to recognize their trans-identified son's self-declared female identity. In a list of orders published earlier this week, the Supreme Court refused to take up the case of these parents that they raised in Indiana against the Indiana Department of Child Services. The court didn't provide a reason for rejecting the petition filed by the Indiana Catholic parents, Mary and Jeremy Cox. Those are just some of today's top headlines. For more stories, check out cbnnews.com. And that story is an interesting one here with the court not taking this up. And of course, with all of the gender battles going on, that one's going to raise some eyebrows.
Yeah, I haven't read all the ins and the outs of why they didn't take it up, but I feel like the Supreme Court on these issues has tried to kick the can down the road. You know, they did this with the bakery case, years ago, sort of sending it back. They have this habit of sending it back to the lower courts or not hearing it sometimes. And this seems to be one of those things that's so flammable that at some point you have to rule on it. You can't allow states to be or governments to be taking kids away from loving parents. Now, I don't know all the details in that particular story with the couple either, but the point is it's going to have to be taken up at some point.
Yeah, this isn't something I think we can just continue to kind of kick the can down the road on or something that we can ignore, because not only is it obviously going to present legal issues, but it's a moral issue, right? More importantly than anything else is how are we going to define male and female? And eventually the court is going to have to take up this case, because unfortunately, as crazy as it seems, because you would think that accepting male and female would be an easy thing to do, it's not an easy thing for our culture to do anymore, apparently, and it's going to have really widespread ramifications, and it's already having serious consequences, and that it just should alarm anybody that the government can come in and take a child away from his or her mom and dad, right? That should be concerning. That should be a very, very last resort thing. And it's not being a last resort in a lot of these situations. It's kind of the first line of defense, just because the parents don't accept the preferred pronouns of the child. And that's obviously a big problem.
Yeah. And we've seen this shift in recent years. And I think a lot of Christians that have been just going about life and living life and kind of eye rolling at some of the language games that we've talked about on this podcast that are being played on this issue, like saying that it's harming the student or it's harming the child if you don't go along with these pronouns. And it's sort of taken away a lot of authority from parents in a lot of situations. We've seen that in schools as well. And so it's very disturbing that this sort of trend is happening, and it's incumbent on us to stand up against these things, because if you don't do anything, you don't say anything, it's just all of a sudden you're going to turn around one day and we're going to be like the UK, where they're arresting people and fining them for praying silently, like we've reported on here outside an abortion clinic. So worth keeping an eye on, as well as this Biden EPA ruling and or basically new standards that they put out and that are really trying to force the auto industry's hands into electric vehicles. This is going to be a big deal because Toyota's pushing back, and we'll continue to report on this as it goes forward. And Toyota's been pushing back on this. They called it actually the first version of this bill draconian, and they still called this one a regulatory mandate. And that's essentially what the Biden administration is doing here. They're trying to, through these regulations, they're trying to force an industry to move in a particular direction.
I mean, I'll just say one thing about this. The current nonsense of this, I'm all for. If there are alternative ways to power things that work, that's great. You're plugging your car into a home and using electricity, which is coming. And you're also, some of these power stations, I would imagine, also run on fuel, right? There's just so many questions around this. And even with the solar panels, we've seen studies saying that they don't off-put enough. Yeah, they're basically, to make them, it creates more emissions than they're putting off, than they're helping with.
And I've read some studies on the new EV cars as well, because the batteries are so big, they're saying they actually put out harmful, you know, toxins into the environment. And so you're just like, wait a minute, why are we forcing these things? Like, if they've already surged in popularity because, really largely because of Elon Musk and making a Tesla, which people liked. If you can make a car that people want to buy, then the market will go in that direction. Like, just having the government trying to force a market on something has never worked really in history. And so it wasn't a good idea when FDR tried it with ranchers and trying to mandate the price of meat that farmers could get and butchers could get for selling their meat. Like, you can't do that. It just doesn't work out when the government tries to force these things. You got to let the market work. So it's really, look, we'll see what happens with this. And if, you know, as soon as Biden, if he's in another term and then out after that, if a Republican, whenever they get in, we'll see if what they do to these regulations, if anything, or if there's any more pushback now. But you can keep tabs on that over at cbnnews.com, faithwire.com, when updates come in. So, all right, we're going to head to the focus story now. And a pro-life activist working to help women realize abortion isn't their only option is on a mission to bring people a system of care and true choices. So what's the story here?
Yeah, this is Jeff Bradford. We have a video with him people can watch over on YouTube, but we talked with him. He heads up the Human Coalition. It's a pro-life organization. And he really talked about the fact that his organization works not just on the legislative side. A lot of people are out there trying to change the laws, but also on the service side, meaning they help women in need. They encourage others to go out and help women in need. And so it's kind of rare. A lot of these organizations, they sort of pick one side or the other, right? They're either serving women directly or they're engaging in legislative battles. And for those who don't know, Human Coalition is one of the largest pro-life, pro-women organizations in the country. That's how Bradford described it. And again, he said they work directly with women who believe that abortion is their only option. That's really sort of the sticking point here. A lot of women who sort of think they can't see beyond their circumstance and they feel that this is their only option. And so on the legislative side, of course, they try to shape the laws to really reduce what he called the supply of abortion across the country. And I thought that was an interesting wording, the supply of abortion, because this is, for the women going through it, they may not view it that way, but for the industry running it, it very much is a money maker and it's a business for them, which is really tragic and unfortunate. And so he said, ultimately, their goal, of course, is to transform the way that people look at this issue.
Yeah, stopping that supply. Well, what is the best way, according to him, to stop abortion, to stop that supply?
Yeah, it's simple. And we've heard this before. you know, obviously they work on the legislative side, so they believe in legislative advances. But he said, ultimately, you really have to change hearts and minds. If you don't change hearts and minds on the issue, you know, you're not going to really solve it. And that is a very big area of focus for them. And that's something we've seen quite a bit, you know, in this Dobbs era with the overturning of Roe v. Wade. And for those who don't know, and I think most people do, Roe v. Wade was the 1973 case that legalized abortion across America. You know, in order to change the perceptions around it, you really have to permeate people's hearts and get them to think differently about what it actually means to take the life of an unborn child. Not talking about this being healthcare, you know, this language that a lot of people on the secular side use to dumb it down. You have to have honest conversations that really get to the point of what's happening.
What might people misunderstand about women with unplanned pregnancies? Because there's a lot of comments about them out there.
Yeah, you know, this is a flammable issue. There's a lot of emotion around it. And so it's very easy to judge, go after people. And of course, the goal would be to encourage people and convince them not to do this, right? But the women who are in these predicaments, you know, he talked a lot about the fact that they want to be seen, they want to be loved, they want to be cared for, they want somebody to stand in the gap for them. And I thought that was an interesting wording because he talked about some of the data that Human Coalition has found on this. 76% of the women who think abortion is their only option, they have said that they would have preferred to parent if their circumstances were different. That's noteworthy. I mean, that's almost 8 in 10 of these women saying we really would have preferred having the baby. And of course, people would say, well, then why didn't you? And that's where Human Coalition and other groups sort of step in because he said, you know, doesn't this break your heart? These women have been told that abortion is their only option, and yet they want a parent. So a lot of these women, they really believe, because this is what they've been told by everybody around them, by culture, society, by some of these clinics when they go in, that the best option for them is to end these pregnancies. And so he said, look, they're in a difficult position because of what they've been conditioned to think and believe, not only from society, but from maybe the father of the baby, their friends, even their parents. A lot of people abandon women in their greatest time of need. And he was encouraging the pro-life movement, obviously, to not do that, to step in and understand the circumstances that people find themselves in.
What personal story did Bradford share that connects him to this issue?
Yeah, you know, obviously he's running Human Coalition, but as it turns out, he had his own circumstance with abortion. His wife now, when they were engaged to be married years and years and years ago, they didn't know where to turn. They had their own unexpected pregnancy, and they ended up at Planned Parenthood, he said, and this was 30 years ago, and they took the life of their first daughter, not knowing at the time that that was their daughter or their child. They didn't understand. You know, he shared his experience, really what was happening. And part of that goes back to the language and the things that we say around this issue, the way that we talk about it, dehumanizing the unborn. And so he wants women, as a result of, you know, his experience and men in these relationships, to understand that there are options and that there are people who want to help them. And that those are the areas, again, that he focuses on at Human Coalition. So he's got a personal connection to this as well, which is heartbreaking.
Yeah, I think that's a danger with a lot of this soft language that's used in this kind of playing with wording that's used with the abortion issue, calling it healthcare and reproductive rights, really takes away the gravity of what's actually happening here.
The fact that they've lost a child obviously is heartbreaking, but also I think it's just a good picture of how the Lord can use things and redeem things, right? Because now they're able to relate to people who are in that same boat or in that same situation in a way that somebody who's further removed and still just as passionate about abortion, and for good reason, but for somebody who's experientially been through it, they have a way of relating to and kind of sharing the gospel with people in a way that those of us who have not been down that road don't have. So it's great to see the way that God can turn something that the world meant for evil and something that was evil, right? It was a sin. It was a choice that they made in disobedience and ignorance, maybe, but still in disobedience. But the Lord has redeemed that, right? And he's using it now for his glory and for our good.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I said, heading into this story, that this is going to be a big issue even after Roe v. Wade. There's a lot of fights happening on the state battle. And of course, Democrats believe they have a stronghold on this issue and they feel it helped them in the midterms. And so they're going to lean into that again, and they're going to call pro-lifers extremists on this front. So you can bet that those things are going to happen. And so this issue is going to once again emerge on center stage here for the world to debate. So we got to pray for hearts and minds, as he said, to be changed on that issue. So, all right, we're going to head over to the main thing now. And is North Korea ready for war? There's been a lot of activity over there that people are really getting nervous about, seeing them growing their military. And it's got concerns around the country, around the world, that this could come to South Korea, maybe even to America. So CBN's Dale Hurd has the latest with that for today's main thing.
Is North Korean leader Kim Jong-un about to go to war with South Korea and the United States? Some experts think it's possible. Kim has ordered his military to prepare for the occupation of South Korea and is, according to some, engaged in frantic military development. And after South Korea and the United States began the Freedom Shield 24 exercises, designed to deter a North Korean invasion, it only caused Kim to issue more threats of war. The task of North Korean experts has always been to try to separate bluster from real threats. And in the past, it's usually been bluster. Bong Young-shik at the Institute for North Korean Studies in Seoul says it's bluster, meant to undermine the current South Korean government from winning parliamentary elections in April. A disturbing report earlier this year by the respected 38 North website, however, indicates this time Kim may be serious. 38 North reports Kim Jong-un has made a strategic decision to go to war because the communist government sees a window of opportunity to forcibly reunify the Korean Peninsula. If the report is true, Asian expert Gordon Chang believes it would be part of a wider Asian war.
North Korea wouldn't go to war unless it got the approval of both Moscow and Beijing. So probably if North Korea were to attack South Korea, it would be in conjunction with China attacking Japan, Taiwan, Philippines, India.
Concerns about North Korea's nuclear program have grown in the past 2 years, as the North has test-launched missiles at a record pace and openly threatened to launch a nuclear attack on the United States. Chang does not necessarily agree that North Korea is preparing for war, but says if it is, the blame falls on the White House for appearing weak.
An important part of this article that I believe is absolutely true, and that is the authors maintain that Kim Jong-un believes that the United States is in global retreat, and that essentially he can pretty much do what he wants. That is a very dangerous mentality. And this is a thinking that also affects Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping. The United States needs to reestablish deterrence because at this moment, the bad actors think that they have a green light.
Kim Jong-un did something very strange a few weeks ago. While touring North Korea's impoverished countryside, he said publicly he's ashamed and sorry for neglecting the economy. It was very uncharacteristic of a leader with a reputation for being ruthless. It could mean Kim finally has a heart, or it could mean he knows a stronger economy will be needed if he's going to fight a war.
Well, thanks for that report, Dale. That is quite jarring when you look at it. I mean, because essentially Kim Jong-un there, he's a madman, right? This person, they deify these leaders in North Korea to the point where they're delusional about the powers they have. And so if he were to get, as Gordon Chang said, a green light from Russia or China, man, that is not good. And when you consider what has happened since former President Trump left office and the incursion by Russia into Ukraine, and of course, essentially what Iran did through their proxies with Hamas to Israel, when you add those things up, what Dale was saying there at the end, that they're just feeling emboldened that this that America's weak right now and America's not going to do anything. And so it's certainly plausible that that could be the route North Korea takes, and that'd be pretty scary.
It would be scary. And also, I mean, this is happening at a very strange time, right? Because America, we're having elections later this year, right? So a lot of these things, not only are they scary in their own right, but they could also affect how people vote and what people are thinking about the election in this country as they weigh the perceived weakness of the current administration.
Yeah, for sure. I think social media just kind of made us aware of everything going on and how small the world is and how the decisions of leaders and militaries and other countries and other parts of the world really impact all of us.
All right. Well, we'll certainly be praying for that one as well. The last thing we need is another war kicking off, especially with a nation run by a madman who has no self-control whatsoever. So definitely prayers there. All right. On this Friday Junior edition of the podcast, we are going to have time for one last thing.
Yes, and it is Psalm 112:5. Good will come to those who are generous and lend freely, who conduct their affairs with justice. It's a good reminder, right, to be living with and through justice and being generous in it.
Yeah, for sure. And trusting in the Lord's justice, right? The justice of the heavenly kingdom is much better than the justice that we might try to wield ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. God's justice is perfect justice all the time, every time. All right, good spot to leave it on this Friday Junior edition of Quick Start. As always, we're thankful you're here. Get yourself on over as well to cbnnews.com and faithwire.com for more news from a Christian perspective. Lord willing, and that creek don't rise. We're going to be back here tomorrow with more for our Friday episode. God bless. See you then.